The reading is taken from Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her."
Thank you, Leslie. And thanks to Dennis in his absence for the welcome. And on the screen, good to be back here with you again. I think this is a bit high. Can it go down? No, I'll just put in. Ooh! Yes. Right, yes, that's better. I can actually see over the top now. The story of Mary and Martha is such a familiar one that I guess most of us would feel that we'd seen the meaning of it long ago. The older ones among you may remember a poem that used to be a favourite of some people sometimes. Do you remember, anybody in the older category, something that went like, "Although I have a Martha's hands, I have a Mary's heart"? Does that ring a bell with anyone? Oh, Gwen, is that right, Gwen?
I don't know, but it's something like that.
Something like that. There was a poem. I can't remember how it went on. I thought there might even be somebody here who would remember how it went on and fill in the gaps, but that's how it started. And it always, this story, rather seemed to help if the house was a mess, you know, and the cooking was rather basic. "Well," you say, "I'm not really a Martha person at all. I'm more of a Mary." As if somehow your untidy house was a kind of back-to-front evidence of greater holiness. So there was that kind of way of looking at it. But we need actually to put all of that onto one side and look at it again. We need to discover something of the absolute shock and revolution about the whole episode. It's very difficult for us today to think back and in a different culture about the way that things would have struck people then. And if I tell it in a different way, you can see what I mean. I was once upon a time, some years ago, doing what Dennis was doing with the children earlier, doing the story of Mary and Martha, and I said something, you know, one of those questions, what did they do when Jesus arrived? And one little boy said, "Oh, they went and saw him get out of his car." And you realised, you know, because we can, you know, but to a child, oh yeah, it would have been quite normal for Jesus and his friends to be coming in the car and he'd be getting out. What sort of car did he have? You know, that was the kind of really real question. Now, we can see that that is complete anachronism, but we don't always quite see just how different a world we live in when it comes to women. We take it for granted that a woman could perfectly easily take the initiative in offering hospitality. But as the video clip showed us, it certainly was not so then. And I read in a commentary where the author was writing about this story that in 30 years of travelling in the Middle East, he had never, ever been invited in by a woman, first of all. It always had to be her husband or her brother. The mistress of the house inviting men to come in was almost inconceivable in first century Palestine. Not just Jesus either, but all his friends as well, a whole troop of them. And Luke's gospel is, of course, the one that emphasizes the place that Jesus gives to women. So it's perhaps not surprising that he is the one who notes down this particular episode. Just as it's Luke who also records in chapter 8 that as Jesus travels from village to village, he is accompanied by the disciples and, says Luke, by various women who Luke names. That would have been another shocking thing for the onlookers, to include the women amongst the disciples who travelled with him. So we already have an unusual situation with Mary and Martha. They are the hosts for these men. But then it's not just Luke who mentions Martha. Do you remember in John's Gospel, when Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, what a central part Martha has? The sisters have sent to Jesus when Lazarus is ill, and Martha is the one who comes out to meet him while Mary stays at home. And we see in her a kind of parallel to the role that Peter has when Peter makes a confession of faith to Jesus at Caesarea Philippi. Just as Peter is doing this, so now Martha is doing it. It's almost an exact parallel. Jesus said to Peter, "Who do you say that I am?" And he replied, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And now, in this part of John's Gospel, we read that Jesus said to Martha, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she said. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God." Now, given the contemporary culture and the views on the place of women, and the fact that it was only boys who had any real education, it's fascinating how Jesus cuts right across this in the way in which his expectations of both men and women are equal. His teaching was for both. And the response that he expected was the same for both. After Martha's confession of faith, we read that she went back and told her sister Mary, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." The teacher is what she calls him. This title isn't just coincidence. The role of Jesus for Mary and Martha, against all the norms of the time, was that of a teacher. Their role was to learn to be disciples, exactly the same way as the men. So, back to the story that we begin with. Martha welcomes Jesus to their home. But, as we already know, this time only Mary is actually listening as a disciple. We know that she's listening as a disciple because of the phrase that's used. We read that Mary sat at the Lord's feet. Now, to us, it sounds a bit as though Mary was a kind of demure, humble woman, maybe sitting on a low stool by the couch on which Jesus was. But actually, it's more of a technical term. The same word is used in Acts 22. That's where Paul is defending himself before King Agrippa and giving an account of himself. And the way he puts it goes like this. I am a Jew, born in Tarsus, but brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel, educated strictly according to our ancestral law. Now that's a literal translation. There is another modern translation, which doesn't even use the word sitting at the feet of. It says, I was brought up in this city, and as a pupil of Gamaliel, I was thoroughly trained. As a pupil. That's what the word sitting at the feet of actually means. So, although we don't use it much like this nowadays, there was a time when, because of the biblical reference, people did use it. Kind of, you can imagine in the Victorian kind of days, somebody saying something like, I sat at the feet of Charles Darwin today, or Isaac Newton, or somebody famous. They could use the phrase, I went and sat at his feet, because of this reference here. So Jesus comes to see his pupil, is the way one translation puts it. His disciples, Mary and Martha. The teacher coming to see his students. Mary is ready to listen and to learn. Mary's, in effect, got her paper and pencil ready, or her laptop out, or whatever the equivalent is. But Martha lets herself be distracted by many tasks. After all, it's not just Jesus, it's all those others who go round with him, who've descended upon the household and need hospitality. And in the pressure of this, she reverts to the traditional female role. Not the one that Jesus has revealed to her, but what would be expected in normal society. She reverts to that traditional role under pressure. And she even goes so far as to say that Mary should be doing it too. But Jesus recalls her to his radical way of thinking. He says, Mary is responding to me, and that's what matters. Martha, you've let yourself be distracted and worried by everything else. Stop that. Listen to me. So what does this story tell us? Well, of course, we take it for granted that education is for girls as well as boys. In fact, nowadays, when Ofsted descends on schools, one of their questions is usually, are the boys doing as well as the girls? Because it's always the boys reading and writing and so on that they're worried about. And it's interesting to speculate on whether we would, in fact, have got to such a point as this without centuries of Christian history, when actually Christian thinking has permeated through Western society. And when you consider the attitudes towards women in cultures that are untouched by Christianity, you realise what a part it has almost unconsciously played. But that's only part of the message. The most important part is not about one gender or the other. That isn't the point of the story. It's about attitude to learning and discipleship. We only get sidetracked if we start thinking of it in terms of domestic duties. Martha doing the cooking, etc., and feeling that Mary should at least be peeling the potatoes. That's very limiting if we are just thinking about it in those kind of female terms. What Jesus says to her is, Martha, you are worried, you are distracted by many things. There's need of only one thing. And this is about everything. for both genders. This is about all the things that can worry and distract us and take us away from listening to what Jesus says. Of course, cooking and shopping have to be done. Of course, work of all kinds has to be done. Daily work, work at home. Of course, there are all kinds of duties to attend to. Jesus doesn't mean that we're to neglect and simply leave them, leave everything else. What he is saying is that Martha has let herself get worried and distracted by them. He could equally have said it to fishermen sorting out their nets. He could equally have said it to farmers fussing about the weeds in their fields. We are to go ahead with all the chores of our daily lives, but we're not to allow them to distract us from seeing God in the midst of it. This can be relevant in church life as well as in our individual lives. I can remember very early when I started as an assistant minister, which was probably about 50 years ago, no, not quite 50, but getting on that way. I recall the time when I was sitting in as an assistant minister on the church meetings and deacons meetings of the big church that I was part of, and somebody had died and left money for an illuminated cross to be put up at the front of the church, which faced onto a busy street, for a witness. And I listened appalled in a youthful, enthusiastic way. I was appalled at the amount of time that got taken up with talking about this cross. Deacons meeting after deacons meeting, church meeting after church meeting, endless discussion. Where exactly on the front should it go? Should it be on the immediate outside, like as if it was on a level with here? Should it be up further? No, if it was up further, then people wouldn't see it so much when they were walking past. But on the other hand, if it was down low, they wouldn't see it from a distance. How should it be lit? Well, you can imagine, these discussions went on and on and on. And they even included making a mock-up of one and putting it in different positions outside, with ladders and ropes. Oh, well, I thought, is this what the church is about? So by getting distracted and worried by all these things, they actually forgot that witnessing was what they were about in many, many other ways in all of life. And it's a kind of symbolic reminder of how you can get bogged down, distracted in all these kinds of things, and actually neglect the main aim that you're going for. So they got distracted and they didn't think. Thinking is important. That's one of the things that comes out of this. That's what sitting at the feet of Jesus entails. Learning from him, being a pupil, being a student, being a disciple, loving God with all of our minds, as well as our hearts. We are to think about what we do as Christians, why we do it, just ourselves or together in groups, in fellowships. So as we go forward again into this week of our lives, we are to be aware of all the things that we've got to do this week, but not be distracted or worried by them, to leave them with God. And we are to continue in our discipleship, asking and seeking and knocking, so that, like Mary and Martha, we also may find God.